KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
The audio in this episode depicts real-life, violent events and may be disturbing for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
Jermaine was very timid growing up as a little kid. He used to get chased home from school. Jermaine used to have everything. I mean, I tried to give him the best life. If he wanted it, he got it.
This is Andrea Robinson, Jermaine's mom. They lived in Northeast Philadelphia. She worked as she tried to raise her kids. Jermaine went to school and would head to the basketball courts after.
My son wanted to be a police officer, but the influence of his neighborhood and his people, he thought that if he became police officer, he was going to be a snitch. He wanted to be a
As we were talking, Andrea's phone sometimes buzzed.
Right there in the area.
Around the age of 11, Jermaine started to be bullied.
People would steal his belongings. Jermaine has been kicked, karate chopped, spit on, all kinds of stuff. And then one day he came home being chased home by four or five boys. And his brother comes in the house and say, "Mommy, some boy's trying to jump Jermaine." And I remember being 7 months pregnant, running out the house with a stick in my hand, trying to find out where was my boy, crying blocks and blocks and blocks.
Jermaine's aunt wanted to step in.
And she said, "I handle it. Don't worry about it." And I said, "No, he has to protect himself. He got to fight, because I don't never want him to get chased home like that again." Was that the biggest mistake of my life? I kind of believe it was. You know why? Because from that day forward, he became a problem.
Gun violence continues to plague cities across the country. In Philadelphia, people are shot every day.
Police say an unidentified man walked in the store, got a gun out, and fired at least five shots.
Around noon, a 26-year-old man was shot several times.
Witnesses described the scene where multiple shooters opened fire as children ran away.
One gunshot can reverberate through a neighborhood, a city, and can have a lasting impact on communities.
I'd rather see you and visit you behind bars than go to your gravesite and visit you in the ground.
Families have been torn apart.
And it's a generation that come in, and then it's a generation that die off, and then it just becomes the same cycle.
As moms, sometimes we know when our kids are heading down the wrong path.
Over the past 5 years, we've gathered interviews and stories from victims and their families, suspects, and defendants.
I didn't have nobody to make, where you at, why you not in the house? They gonna treat you like you did the worst thing in the world. And all you was trying to do is protect yourself.
And people on the front lines of the violence.
We are spending a fortune to pay for these young men to be hospitalized. We're paying a fortune to incarcerate them. This is not a sustainable model.
What drives someone to pick up a gun and shoot? Does it really protect you? And how much influence do families really have? From Gone Cold, I'm Kristen Johansson. This is Ricochet. When I was speaking to Uptown and Jay, they said something interesting that made me think of Jermaine.
We innocent as y'all kids are. I mean, we helpless. We just helpless. I mean, if our mom made $150,000, $200,000, we wouldn't be carrying guns. We stuck around everybody, you know, crab in a barrel. And somebody see you with something that you got and they don't got, it could cause an issue.
One thing I would like to say to a judge is not to judge me off a piece of paper. Because people make mistakes. So, like, even though I was convicted of crimes, that's not saying the person that I am. If somebody, like, caught a case for shoplifting or something, I'm not going to look at you as a thief or someone to steal. It's just everybody make mistakes. So I just don't like that they judge you off of the paper. Basically, your rap sheet is not true.
They bring up everything bad about you and nothing good. You know what I'm saying? You can save a cat, anything. Run in the house, burn the fire. You locked up with a gun, they gonna treat you like you did the worst thing in the world. And all you was trying to do is protect yourself. I don't tolerate rape. I don't tolerate stealing. I don't tolerate robbing around me, none of that stuff. So it's not like I'm a lawless person, you know what I'm saying? And it's like locking people up and letting them back out ain't changing nothing.
Uptown grew up with a mother who was struggling with addiction.
She did her best. I love her to death. I take care of her to this day. But I just didn't grow with no guidance. I didn't have no man in my life to tell me, like, no, don't do that. You worry about the wrong stuff. Go to school. I didn't have that. I did 3.5. 3 years, 8 months, something like that. Came home, got locked up with another gun on house arrest.
Two siblings?
Yeah, I got two sisters and an older brother. I had to feed myself, so And I thought like this, I ain't got nobody, so I'm not playing by my bread. That's how I used to think. So I used to carry my gun.
Uptown had no one to raise him, no one to ask questions about where he was, what he was going to eat, if he went to school. Tavon Thomas tried to help raise his siblings in an abusive environment with a drug-addicted mother. Jermaine was raised by a working mother who did everything she could to give her children good lives and parent them well.
I have three sons. And one thing I tell them, you can't be no punk. You have to be a man. I have taught my sons that you have to be strong and courageous and bold and outspoken. And is it right? Probably not, because why he can't be who God created him to be. And so that's our fear as a parent, that somebody's going to run over top of our sons and or, you know, our daughters.
After being beaten up on the basketball court, Andrea gave her son some gloves, taught him a bit of boxing and how to defend himself.
He started believing that he was untouchable. And from that age of 11, from being that timid little boy that wanted to please everybody, that wanted to do everything right, being chased home to have to put on them boxing gloves, to now becoming the gentle terrorist, because he meant well, but he was always doing evil because he felt like he had something to prove to his peers.
Andrea believes the lesson backfired.
I started that way. Jermaine, you gotta be this, you gotta do this, you gotta do this, you gotta do this. If you don't, they gonna do this, they gonna do that, and da-da-da-da-da. And then when he gets 11 and he get arrested because he assaulted a teacher,
they put handcuffs on him and placed him into a cop car. It was the start of Jermaine's criminal record. Andrea told me some pieces of it, but in Pennsylvania, there's a law that prohibits anyone except select law enforcement from being able to see a full juvenile record.
He left my house at 15, so he would come visit. He would go to prison, come home. I'll get him for the first 2 weeks, then he'll disappear. Don't see him no more.
Jermaine ran away and lived with his girlfriend from time to time. Andrea would try to get him to come home, but he'd get in trouble and would leave.
I knew my son had a gun. I did. Because it'd be times he'll come to the bathroom and the gun's sitting on the side of the toilet and he forgot it.
He was first arrested as an adult when he was 18 years old on drug charges. He was arrested again just a few months later when he was 19 on more drug charges. He pleaded guilty and was sentenced to 11 and a half to 23 months in prison with 5 years probation. Jermaine had additional drug charges at 20, and a few months later, assault, disorderly conduct, and resisting arrest.
My son had assault on a police officer, did a year, came home. It wasn't me. My son got caught with a gun charge. It wasn't me. But then I'll hit the storm and I'll come back and say, Jermaine, why are you lying? Mom, no, why are you lying? You're guilty.
He had several violations of probation, and it was too much for Andrea. But she did try to get him back on track.
I'm not afraid of nothing I gave birth to. You could try that stuff for the streets, but not here. The cops got called out. The cop looked and said, what is going on in here? And I said, he acting crazy, but I ain't scared of him. And the cop said, did you touch him? I said, does it matter? And he said, you know what, young man, go. You can leave. The cop told my son he can leave the house. And guess what? Now he want to run. Because guess what? He got an ankle bracelet on and he wasn't supposed to leave from the beginning. So now he done left. The cops done left. My son going for 2 weeks, finally hungry, tired, burnt out. He comes home. You know what I told him? Go upstairs, get washed and dressed, change your clothes, take a nap, get you something to eat. Because guess what? I'm turning you in. When he did all of those things, I grabbed him by his hand, put him in the car, and we drove him over to the 25th Police District. I said, y'all looking for Jermaine Robinson. Here he is. The cop looked at me like, what? They left him. If he wanted to run, he could have. We sat there for a half an hour. Nobody came out. Finally, somebody came out with handcuffs. And my son put his head up and he walked out. He was back out again about 6 months later to do the same thing over and over again.
Because he had been convicted of a crime, Jermaine was not allowed to have a gun. But he was arrested for having one when he was 22. He got another year to 2 years in jail and 6 years probation.
I watch my son at the prison and he'll come out, Mom, give me a hug, give me a kiss. And the moment they take his slip for him to go back, I watch his chest stick up and his head fly back and he do this little walk. And I used to be so irked by it. He had to do it to survive.
The judges would order educational programs and job training. But after serving time, Jermaine was back out on the streets.
It's a citizen act. If you look at the Tioga section, man armed with a gun Jermaine, is that you? Mom, chill. Stop watching the app, Mom. Shootout on such and such and such. Jermaine, is that you? Mom, stop being paranoid. I'm chilling, Mom. All these times. Man pulled out a handgun, threatened everybody in the store. Jermaine, is that you? Yeah, Mom. Man on pursuit, jotted up. Yeah, Mom. I'm like, instead of saying, Lord, get him off of these streets. Lock him up. I said, Lord, have mercy. And that prayer of mercy kept him out there longer to do what?
When he was 24, he was arrested on more drug charges and was sentenced to another year or two behind bars, but was immediately paroled for time served. He remained on probation. And then on April 19th, 2021, something happened.
Beautiful day. Woke up that morning, on my way to work, school bus driver. I watch a crowd of people coming from a funeral, about five young men. These guys come up. I see one elbow somebody, the other one pulled out a gun, start shooting down the block. I had to go into the wrong direction to get out of that area. I said, I can't believe this. I get to work, pick the children up. My job is four blocks from where my son hangs out at. I can see the block going to work. I can see the block picking the kids up. I can see the block bringing the kids back home. Gets home from work, and I ask my daughter to do my hair. And I say these words to her, everybody be quiet. We need a moment of silence. I'm tired of y'all, the chatter, the talk, just everybody be quiet. Between the hours of 6:30 to about 7:15, we all was quiet in the house. She finished my hair. I went upstairs. I got a text. Miss Andre, did you see this? The Citizen app. Man grazed. Another man shot multiple times. I said, that's my son.
It was about 7:30 at night.
I got the call. Miss Andrea, they don't know who it is, but I think it's Maine. I said, it's him.
Investigators say Jermaine and another man were on Emerald Street near Tioga in the Harrogate neighborhood, which is part of Kensington. Jermaine was shot several times throughout the body and head. He was 29 years old.
My daughter calls. Mom, I'm at the hospital. They identified Jermaine with a tattoo that said, number one mom, Andrea. I told my baby girl, I said, your brother's gone. And she said, no. I said, stop crying. We knew this was going to happen, right? And she said, yes.
Andrea turned to her other son, who was 15 at the time.
I said, Jermaine is gone. He said, that's crazy. And guess what? I asked him, why you don't mourn? You know what he said to me? He was never around, Mom. He was known for being in jail. He said, I really didn't know my brother. I look at his picture in my phone with the wounds at least 7-8 times a month because that's my boy. That was my child that I carried. And then to watch him go through his years of life and then this is his end.
Andrea had published a book called Mothers of Trap Boys a month before Jermaine was killed about mothers fighting to get their kids off the streets.
My son read my book the day before he got killed and he said these words, Mom, I read that book. My friend said, you talking about me. And I said, well, Jermaine, you my inspiration. I said, but you're not dead and you're not in jail.
Less than 24 hours later, after years spending time in and out of prison, Jermaine Robinson was dead.
Somebody said they took this cop, scooped his body and took him to the hospital. But I stayed on my bed. And when my daughter called me, I said, I'm not going. I'm not going.
I asked if she was angry at him.
I am. I'm very angry with him. Because a week before he died, I said to him, I said, Jermaine, you ain't scared to die? And he said, Mom, I'm not scared to die. If I die, I die.
Jermaine's case remains unsolved.
They called him shooter.
Andrea tried to get him on the right path, warning him about the people he was spending time with, forbidding him to bring a gun into the house, grounding him, reporting him to police, begging judges to lock up her son, calling him relentlessly, asking where he was and what he was doing.
I chased my son off of drug blocks. I put up wanted signs at the age of 15, 16. Have you seen him? Call me or 911. I turned my son into the police officers and said, here he go. Help me. We can't do that, miss. I have sit in court cases. I watched my son lie and I knew he was guilty. And he think he can beat a case with manipulation. And me going in the back to talk to him and say, if you guilty, you better admit that you're guilty. So that way you can pay these consequences and get it out your system and move on. And then he plead guilty and they slap him on the wrist and give him 2-3 years probation. And he goes back to the same block that you caught him on.
Andrea says Jermaine was a generous guy to the people he hung with, but that he ran with the wrong crowd.
He was quote-unquote shooter, the big guy, the one that the drug addicts loved. He took his shoes off. He gave it to him. He gave him a dollar for something to eat, gave him allowance. They want to put a memorial up on the wall. But you want to put a memorial up on the wall of a drug dealer that y'all call shooter? He dies and they say, bring his body back to the hood. Bring his body back to the jungle. And guess what? These same quote unquote friends don't post him. Don't check on his mama. Don't even acknowledge him. And I used to tell my son, you're going to be a shirt on the face that eventually going to go in a dirty clothes pile and into the trash. Because all that you did sacrifice for what? The streets. Now you dead and gone, and these lives, they done moved on, and they trying to find the next.
We'll be right back. You're listening to Ricochet. Andrea tried to get her son Jermaine to stay on the right path, teaching him how to box to defend himself when he was a kid. But when he was an adult, he picked up a gun to protect himself.
You live by the sword, you die by it. But here's the thing. They think them guns can protect them. It can't. My son, when his body was on that ground, they picked him up, took the gun off his hip. You had a gun on you. Couldn't use it. I used to watch my son take the gun, put it in the duffel bag, zip it up. Now, wait a minute. You got this for protection. So what you gonna do? Try to get it and unzip it? That lets you know that cannot protect you.
Jermaine created rap videos and posted them on social media.
Son, a week before he died, are you afraid to die? You rapping about killing and murdering. You're putting a target on your head. You know what his words said? His words to me at 29? Mom, this is what we're doing. This is what we're talking about. This is what we're rapping about. But why you got to be like everybody else? He didn't rap in his last video because he got murdered a week after this video got released. He didn't rap, but I watched my son put a gun to his head 7 times in the video. He spoke his own death.
That's the same number of times Jermaine was struck in the head.
Shot 7 times above the neck.
She believes the pandemic played a part. During the height of COVID, the city was trying to cut down on people living in any group housing, like correctional facilities. They decided to release people who were not behind bars for violent offenses. Jermaine was on that list. Drug and gun charges are nonviolent offenses, even if Andrea believes it was part of the violent game he was playing.
I just found a piece of paper in my top drawer that he was on probation until September the 9th of 2023. So on his mind, he had no PO no more. He had nobody come check on him.
During COVID, to decrease the spread of disease, probation officers were doing phone call check-ins, not knocking on doors of someone on probation to see how they were doing.
And so he ran loose and did just what he thought he was big enough to do. And he lost his life because of it.
Jermaine Robinson isn't unique. He's one of about 370 Black men who were killed in Philly in 2021.
I'm Diana Anhalt, and I'm a judge in the Court of Common Pleas in Philadelphia.
Judge Anhalt handles homicide and shooting cases. She's a former Philly assistant district attorney who prosecuted sexual assault and domestic violence cases. And before that, she worked with defendants.
I was a juvenile probation officer in the city of Chester in Delaware County. Before that, I worked in a women's prison in Philadelphia.
I've sat in Judge Anhalt's room for some of the worst cases I've ever seen. Murdered children, marginalized victims, grieving, soul-crushed mothers sobbing as they read victim impact statements or see their beloved son head off to prison for decades or for life.
There are no winners here. I've said this to people, and mothers have shaken their head and agreed with this. Like, as moms, sometimes we know when our kids are heading down the wrong path, and it's like a freight train, and you can put your arms out to try to stop it like you're Superman or Superwoman. But ultimately, I'm not Superwoman, I'm not Superman, and I'm not going to be able to stop that train. And moms can see this. And so every mom that's in that situation would rather see their son in prison then visit a grave.
Ultimately, Judge Anhalt's job is to follow Pennsylvania law. She listens to prosecutors and defense attorneys, defendants, victims, and families, and hears legal arguments and looks over all the evidence.
trying to work the balance between, look, you're going to go to do some prison time because you committed a horrendous crime. But while you're there, we need to try to get to the bottom of whatever is causing you to be in this situation.
Her belief about why people are there in the first place is rooted in a defendant's history.
I think trauma is one of the main reasons that we're having a hard time controlling the gun violence in the city.
Andrea believes her son may have killed before, or at the very least, shot other people. His nickname was Shooter, but Jermaine was never charged with any shooting-related offense.
Nobody won't tell me. Till today, I don't know if my son ever caught bodies. You know what I would get? By his baby mom? It's Andrea, your son crazy. And I'd be like, what he do? She'd be like, he is crazy. That's all she would say. But when my son would come in my presence, he come in with his hood, take the hood off. He'll pull it off and give me the pretty smile. He'll kiss me on my cheek and have a seat. And what he did outside, I can't tell you.
When someone is being sentenced, there's something called a pre-sentence investigation report that basically is a defendant's documented personal history, like how we heard about Tavon Thomas's background.
He had younger siblings. He would take care of the siblings. He would feed them and do what he could do. But even with that, the mother would come home and he was abused, physically and emotionally abused. He was beaten.
So whether it's childhood trauma, whether it's dealing with their own sexual abuse, which could be an issue, or whether it's, unfortunately, the amount of violence that children see on a daily basis is overwhelming to me, right? Like, I just can't imagine, like, to try to protect your children from violent movies is kind of something that I've, you know, been conscious of as a parent. But to see that daily in real life, I don't think that we have begun to sort of unravel or unpack how that is impacting the kids and the young people that we see today.
I've heard it in nearly every sentencing hearing I've been to. Child abuse, whether physical, verbal, or sexual, child neglect, parents or siblings killed or imprisoned, very little money, child protective services being called. Sometimes the parents are super involved, like Andrea, and sometimes they aren't, like the parents of Tavon and Uptown.
Most people do realize that they have seen traumatic events. They've been a part of traumatic events. You know, my goal is to help them learn how that trauma impacts the way they are going to eventually be released from prison and the way they're going to live their life on the outside. I've sort of tried to incentivize therapy by giving people long periods of probation and saying, like, look, if you complete a trauma therapy program, I'll take time off of your probation at the end. Or if you get some college credits, or if you have a job that you maintain, I'll take some time off the back of your probation. Because look, at the end of the day, the more services that you complete, the more education that you get, the less likely you are to recidivate. And it helps the rest of us because we're going to cut down on the kinds of and the amount of crime that are being committed.
Judge Anhalt was also supervisor of something called the Gold Ring Initiative, which I hadn't heard of until recently.
GRI is a program that is out of the University of Pennsylvania's School of Social Work and Social Policy. It sends master's level social work students.
Basically, Penn's graduate students who are studying social work connect with people incarcerated in Philly jails and help guide them back into society.
Establish a relationship with the clients so that there's a trust level, so that they can figure out what each person needs. And those needs really vary based upon who the person is.
There are no guidelines for who qualifies or what offense they've committed.
The social workers will go in and basically focus on some of the real basics, like, do you have ID? Well, if you don't have ID, you can't get a job, a legitimate job. And so let's get that. Do you have a social security card? Never had that. Well, let's get that. Do you have health insurance? Everybody who walks out of prison in GRI has an ID, has a social security card, and has medical insurance ready for when they get out of prison. And those three things right then and there set people up for success. Because I can order all the trauma therapy in the world, but if a person can't pay for it, how is that their fault that they can't get it?
We'll Being locked up and losing everything and having nothing to come home to is something Uptown and Jay have personally experienced.
When I get locked up, I lose everything I got. I got kids. I don't get to see my kids. I lose my relationship with my kids. I lose my house. My kid got his own room at home. I lose all that when I get locked up. I lose my cars. And then what I'm supposed to do? Rob somebody? But I've still got enough sense not to do that. But every time I come home from jail, or every time I go to jail, I'm just sitting in jail, spending money, not making none. And then when I get out, I'm starting from scratch. And you tell me to come home homeless, provide for my kids and myself with a rap sheet? That's not fair.
Uptown told me he was trying to start a business before he was locked up.
It's mortifying, you know. It affects you emotionally. Make you feel less of a man. That's why I never had kids again, because I want to live in the house with my kids. Like, I'm smart. I want things out of life. I got my own business and stuff like that.
You beat the case, there should be some type of, like, reward or something. Because let's just say, for instance, if the shoes on the other foot, let's say you got lost at sea for 8 months to a year. You got bills that still got to get paid. You got car note, everything. Like, life doesn't stop when you go to prison. So say when you get back, and then what? You done lost your home and everything. And that's how it is being incarcerated. You're suffering the consequences of your actions, true. But being as though you're here for doing something wrong, it should be something in here to better your situation, for you to do better when you do get out. Because you go to jail and then I'm here with this murderer or this bank robber or this thief, and criminal among criminals, all you're doing is sharpening your blade.
The other issue is in prison, alliances are formed, which can cause beefs between others. And there's violence and more trauma.
I seen a Kennison Strangler. I seen him get stabbed in the head 10 times. And he was still fighting back like it was normal.
Some people should just talk it out. Because you got people who's at war with each other. And then when you find out what it's over, it'd be like, dude, this could easily be prevented. It could easily be prevented. Everybody working with pride. It's like, when I came home from jail, I was only home 40 days from doing 4 years, and I got shot. Being as though I'm a convicted felon and I can't get a firearm, it's like a lose-lose.
Scott Charles, who works with gun violence victims at Temple University Hospital, says a lot of people involved in the violence want to change their lives. They just don't know how.
For the vast majority of them, there is a desire to change their circumstances, and to the degree that they can, to change their lives and the moves that they're making. But what we have to figure out is how to make that possible for them. Because if they knew how prior to the shooting, they would have done it. As far as they understood, it was beyond their reach or maybe slightly beyond their motivation, but now they're motivated. And once that door is open, we've got to, you know, once that window of awareness is open, we've got to seize that moment. And that's what we're trying to do more and more. But I'll tell you, we are spending a fortune as a society to pay for these young men to be hospitalized. We're paying a fortune to incarcerate them. This is not a sustainable model.
For Andrea, prison did not help Jermaine. She has lost a son who was involved in the chaotic world of violence.
And who gives these people the authority to kill? Thou shalt not kill. And we supposed to love each other as we love ourselves. But the problem is, do they really love themselves? Because how can you murder somebody and then lose sleep and be on the run? And you're like, how? Like, you got to be really a cruel, evil, wicked person to take a life and can go to sleep peacefully every night. But my son lived by that sword. And when he got killed, I wasn't shocked.
Next time on Ricochet.
I said, listen, please, my name is Louis Berrios. I just was shot by two men, black men who were trying to rob me. Please send somebody. I don't want to die.
I think the most difficult conversations are the patients that aren't doing well and then ask you, am I going to die? Or don't let me die.
What we end up seeing happening with individuals who get shot is a lot of them want to change the circumstances the best they can. So even though they may not have been the intended target, they might have been going, hanging out with guys that they probably know are caught up in something. Or you know, they're going out to a Chinese restaurant at midnight. And, you know, as my mama always said, nothing good happens after midnight.
This episode is produced and audio edited by Sabrina Boyd Circa. A special thank you to Tom Rickert, Winston Harris, Christina Koppeser, and Myron Kaplan. Listen to more episodes of Gone Cold free on the Odyssey app.